Thank you for coming to my talk, especially since I realized I couldn't probably think of a more boring sounding talk when I submitted this abstract, but I tried to spice it up a little bit. Really what I'm looking at is how can we deconstruct the trends that we see in hospital birth by mother sociodemographic factors. And my name's Stephanie Koning. I'm a PhD student at University of Wisconsin-Madison in population health, and I'll be presenting on survey work that I did with the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization starting in 2009. I've worked in northern Thailand among Highland ethnic minority populations from Thailand and Burma for the last 7 years, three of which were based in Thailand. And I guess I'm supposed to do this first. I have no relationships to disclose, but I also want to acknowledge a close mentor of mine in at UNESCO Bangkok, David Feingold, as well as a UNESCO colleague, Amanda Flame, who's at Cornell University, and also a mentor at University of Wisconsin-Madison, Elizabeth Jacobs, who does health disparity research among different minority groups in the U.S. And also my funders, including the British Embassy in Bangkok, the International Sustainable Development Studies Institute, who supported some of my work in Thailand before starting graduate school, and then two NIH grants through University of Wisconsin. So before I jump into some of the specific questions that I'll be looking at today on maternal and child health care access to or access and utilization, I want to introduce you a little bit to the major themes in my own work. I might be preaching to the choir in this audience. Oh, I also wanted to say I feel very privileged to be on this specific panel with you, the other presenters. But I might be preaching to the choir, but I have some agendas of my own in my research career that have to do with data. How many people in this room work with data? Okay, that's great. So one of my beefs is the emphasis on averages and changes in averages as a proper indicator of effectiveness of health interventions and development context especially. I think as outsiders approaching international and global research, we can I think this just turned off, maybe? Okay. As outsiders, we can often assume that the populations that we're working with are very homogenous, that the data that we have are good and comprehensive, and that we don't need to disaggregate the data by important factors that aren't included in our data set. Maybe that's not as much of a problem among this audience, but I want to just highlight that as a problem that we saw at UNESCO that we tried to face by conducting the Highland People Survey in northern Thailand of all registered villages within 25 kilometers of the Thai-Burma border, which include a large population of individuals that are not ethnically Thai and also include migrants and individuals that don't have citizenship or any kind of form of legal status in their country of residence or any other country for that matter. And I think this is important to highlight early on because we can often think of these factors as being one and the same, particularly in the U.S. with certain populations. When we talk about legal status, we assume, oh, we're talking about illegal migrants, or we're talking about people that just came into the U.S. illegally. But there's a long history among different populations worldwide where there's traditionally migratory populations that were never granted citizenship status in any country and now are being challenged by local nation states on land rights, access to social services such as education and health services, as well as ability to freely migrate even within country borders and also international borders. So I want to just keep that factor in mind as one of the factors that we don't often totally understand coming in to this new context in Southeast Asia. And I know there's other people probably in this room that can speak to similar factors in other regions that I'm less familiar with. So the study objectives that I want to go over today is describing trends over time in hospital births between different ethnic groups in northern Thailand specifically, and also between individuals of different citizenship statuses and educational levels. And then I want to more closely examine these trends in light of specific primary care interventions in Thailand that have received more attention and assess the differences in healthcare use between groups, or the disparities in healthcare use that we see between these groups before and after specific interventions. And for the sake of time, I'm going to just focus on one intervention. So here is a map of the region in which we were working in. We conducted a survey of over 70,000 individuals and 15,000 households on the border, and the little dots indicate the different villages that were included in this survey. And to give you an idea of the ethnic composition, I actually limited the analysis today to just ethnic groups that fit into this broader category of hill tribe groups in northern Thailand and ethnic Thais. But the sample that we collected actually included over 20 different ethnic groups. The reason why I'm focusing on Highland ethnic minorities is because I can make some more generalizations of what I know about these groups and what could be driving some of the different trends that we see. But to give you a general overview, each of these groups, some you might be familiar with, the Lahu, Karen, Akha, Hmong, Lisu, and another group of smaller tribes in Thailand, include traditionally migratory groups that are believed to have originated in Tibet, China, Burma, and Thai areas before borders were established very recently, really. And some have more recently migrated from other countries, and some have been in Thailand for generations. But there's a whole literature in political science and anthropology on the different factors that led to who was granted citizenship early on in this country and who wasn't, and also who have been fleeing different political contexts in other countries such as Burma, and who have been more established in Thailand for a longer period of time. To give you a general overview of characteristics of mothers in this sample, it was a cross-sectional survey, so I included any woman who reported having given birth to any of her children, and I linked any children of hers that were still in her household to her, so we could look at maternal and child relationships as well. But overall, we see that among Highlanders, 65% of children of women in the survey were born in a hospital, and that's switched, I believe. So overall, 65% of the, it must be the switch. So 65% of Thais were born in the hospital, and 34% of Highlanders were born in the hospital. And I think it got re-switched later. So the 22% of Highlanders do not have citizenship. 3% of Thais do not have citizenship in this population. 90% of Highlanders do not have any schooling. 34% of ethnic Thais don't have any schooling. And then you can read some of the other descriptives with other schooling levels. So this is the general trend we see in the increase in individuals born each year that were born in the hospital. So it looks like things are getting better in some ways. We know the access to emergency obstetric care and healthcare facilities is known to reduce certain risks, but talking about when it's the most appropriate is another discussion, or you can ask me about it after this. I want to highlight some of the main maternal and child health interventions in Thailand in this region. And we see that Highlanders were only really targeted for any type of primary care intervention in the early 90s. And then healthcare centers that could provide childbirth services were expanded in the mid-90s. And then we see the universal coverage plan in 2001. So this received a lot of attention because it basically was granting universal healthcare coverage to everyone in the country, so it claimed, for only 30 baht a year, which is less than a dollar. So we can think about this trend in light of the interventions. Keep in mind 2001 in particular. That's what I'm going to focus on today. And now that we disaggregate by different ethnic minority groups, you can see that the changes weren't constant over time. I don't have a lot of time to go into the specifics about these trends, but overall you can just see that ethnicity matters. It's not something that's captured in a lot of the national censuses either on what could be driving disparate use. And then if we look at mother citizenship, we see that citizens are much more likely to use hospitals for childbirth. And we also see a difference by education level with a pretty clear cut between whether or not you've completed primary school being a predictor of whether or not you'll use a hospital. And it looks like there could be a growing disparity since universal health care coverage was implemented, which is actually, I don't think, entirely surprising. I'm not going to go into this too much because for the sake of time, but basically I performed a hierarchical linear or logistic regression in order to model a woman's odds of giving birth in the hospital, paying particular attention to these three factors, minority status, citizenship status, and education, and controlling for year of birth, maternal age, and wealth. And first, I look overall at everyone in the data set, and we see that as you could guess from looking at the unadjusted numbers that Highlanders were much less likely to give birth in the hospital, so were non-citizens, and we see that more education improves their likelihood of giving birth at the hospital. But then I broke this up between individuals born before the universal health care coverage plan and after. And this is before. We see that you know, Highlander status isn't significantly related to hospital births, but I'm certain, I haven't looked closely at it yet, but if you separate by ethnic groups, you'll see more significant differences. Non-citizens is significantly important, and when I say significant, I don't just mean statistically significant, I mean important and meaningful as well. And no schooling is also very important. It basically reduces your odds of about 70% for whether or not you'll receive care at the hospital. And then if you look at after the universal health care plan, who knows, it actually looks like disparities are getting worse. Now, there's a few different interpretations of this. Some people might say, oh, of course, the most disadvantaged are going to be the least likely to benefit from an intervention. Like, that's as we would expect. But that's not really the public health practitioner's point of view, or that's not what we would want, especially since non-citizens and those without schooling are probably experiencing the worst health outcomes, and we should be targeting those groups specifically. Furthermore, from qualitative work that I did in Thailand, there's indications that the plan actually could have created more barriers for certain individuals, such as those with less schooling and without citizenship in receiving care, particularly in light of ID cards that are necessary for actually receiving care now that were established in order to centralize the administering of care and the funding of care. So basically, doctors are now forced to be more discriminate in who they can provide care for because they have to basically provide a receipt to the government to get reimbursed for caring for you. So to wrap up, my conclusions are, let's think more closely about who's still not getting care even after these specific interventions. What are some of the positive even though there's positive average effects on hospital births, they're actually persistent or even new barriers for certain subgroups that are of particular concern, I would say. And more specifically, I think the implications of this work is that we need to be skeptical of averages. Sorry about the typo on there. But we need to demand to see more distributions of health. We're not just interested in average health improvements. We're interested in how underlying distributions are changing and who's the most affected. And also, we need to disaggregate data in order to be able to understand the specific stories or social factors influencing health, health, and we always need to keep in light of who are the people that aren't even being counted in the data that we're collecting. This was an unprecedented survey that I'm talking about that we didn't really have before of this population. And with that, I'd like to thank you, and please contact me if you have more questions.
Congratulations, Stephanie. Great paper.
Thank you.
Let's give a round of applause.